and Tis the Law has the lead at the top of the stretch. It is Tis the Law in front with 3/16 to the finish. Tis the Law has a four-length lead. He's left the others behind.
Live from the backstretch at historic Saratoga Racecourse, this is Racing Across America. Racing Across America is brought to you by Pennell's Restaurant, a Saratoga tradition since 1922. 284 Jefferson Street, Saratoga. Just minutes from the track. The new Capital OTB wagering platform. Bet any place, anytime, with the new Capital OTB wagering platform. CapitalOTBBet.com, the premier wagering site in New York State. And the Clubhouse Racebook. Can't make it to the track? Make it to the Clubhouse Racebook. 711 Central Avenue, Albany.
Good morning. Welcome to Racing Across America on this Wednesday morning as we kick off another week of racing here at Saratoga. We are live from our Clare Court location. When we got in this morning, starting the handicappers report, it was a little overcast, but now very nice. Nice temperature, a little breeze, sunny out. So, knock wood, the day remains much like this. We'll see, but we have our fingers crossed. This morning on the show, a little bit later on, we're going to show live the Judmont International from York this morning because it is Baid going for career victory number 10 and career start number 10 in one of the top races over there in Europe, the Group 1 from York. Mishriff is also in there. Should be a fun race to kind of take a look at. And that'll be about 10:35. And so because of that, in this next segment, I pulled up a little tape piece from last year, but I thought it was appropriate because with 3 weeks left in the meet, I'm going to show you what we shot last year as far as breakfast on the front side, which is a great kind of activity at the track. If you haven't taken advantage of that, go over and take advantage of the buffet breakfast or bring your own donuts. You can sit up in the box seats. You watch the workouts. You can take a tram ride to the backstretch and get a look at what goes on back here every day, a starting gate demonstration. So it's a lot of fun. And again, 3 weeks left. I thought I'd plug in the breakfast piece from last year. Coming up towards the end of the program, last segment anyway, Barbara Livingston will join us. She has an exhibit across the street at the Racing Museum. Jim Raftery, a turf photos retrospective, a longtime track photographer who his collection Barbara took from the family, and now she's sorting through it, and we'll learn all about how she learned about the collection and got the collection, and points you to the exhibit across the street because the pictures are great. They chronicle racing and race horses and the personalities and events and history of the racetrack. Very, very interesting, and Barb's doing a great job kind of keeping the collection together and digitizing some of it, and you can catch a lot of it across the street until the end of September. So we'll talk about that a little bit later on. But top of the show, hey, it's our friend Kevin Cox, the Brooklyn Cowboy. We're going to do a little handicapping for this afternoon. Good morning.
Good morning, sir. How are you?
Very good. How about you?
Not bad, not bad. I had a little bit of drama last night. A giant tree fell down just a couple of houses away from me. Ooh. And it was only one gust. We got no rain.
I was going to say, there wasn't anything really going on.
It wasn't a drop of rain, just one simple gust knocked down this humongous tree. And luckily nobody was hurt. But other than that, I'm okay.
Well, I have to ask you, looking at Twitter, you caught up with another main fair, Skowhegan. How was that?
Two fairs. I hit Topsom one day and Skowhegan the next day. The Skowhegan was the better of the two. It's a grind, man. It's some drive to get there and get back. I tell you, it's like Groundhog Day. It's about six hours to come home, you know, the same to get there. And but it's a labor of love. I have another one coming up in 2 weeks, Windsor, and then one more in September. You have to hit them now before they close down because you never know.
Yeah, folks who watch the show know that my father was from Maine and my family had a house up there for years and years. And I spent many, many, many summers, including this summer. I was up there the 4th. But I have spent September right after the track up there. And ever been to Cumberland County Fair?
Cumberland.
That is a nice fair. And harness racing. And it's kind of funny, probably from where our house was, 15, 20 minutes up the road, you come up a little road, you come into Cumberland, which is a little nothing of a place, but some residential. You go out, and So you go out, and all of a sudden you're in farm country, and about another half mile you go over a hill, and you're there. It's just fields and cornfields and whatnot. You go over a hill, and it's like Field of Dreams. There's a racetrack and a county fair going on.
I was just going to use that analogy. And for those diehard horse fans who go to Aqueduct or Belmont, it's nothing like that. Everybody really gets into it for the sport. They're only betting $2 or $5 a race, and they cheer for the horses even if they end up losing. They were even cheering for a couple of non-betting races with a purse, but $18,000-$20,000, as a matter of fact.
Now, it's Cumberland County. And it, again, if you're thinking, man, it, like you say, it's a drive. I have done it so many times, I'm kind of used to it. And it's pretty much highway the whole way up. But it's at least to Portland, you're talking 4 or 5 or something like that. And so then you go up to these fairs, it can add a little onto it. But, you know, the fall, you'll go up, catch that. And September in Maine, you can still get some beach time in, but the fairs are a lot of fun. And the nice thing about Cumberland County, you know, most fairs, you go to the food booth and it's like steak on a stick and it's fair food. You go to Cumberland County Fair, it's lobster rolls and fried clams. There's nothing wrong with that.
And I definitely recommend Freiburg. That's the biggest one with the most animals if you have kids and you want to bring the kids. And maybe a two-day thing if you go in that way.
Yeah, the animals are fun too. The draft horses where they're pulling weights and they go up and come back and time them, that's fun. I always go and sit in and watch some of that. And then by the time I get there in September, they're also putting out the pumpkins, which are the size of Volkswagens.
You know what I really enjoyed seeing is they have whatever showing contests for sheep or cows, whatever. And there are these young kids, 12, 13-year-olds, with these sharp scissors, and they're just snipping away. And it's so great to get them away from the phone or the TV or the computer and just to see them doing something wholesome like that.
No, the 4-H kids are a lot of fun with their animals. And those are always exhibited as well. So I will highly recommend the Cumberland County Fair. But I think you're right. You go up there and the harness racing up there on the fair circuit. And I miss, when I went up there, I was pretty close to Scarborough Downs. I went there many, many times. So I miss Scarborough Downs. But it used to be the Scarborough Downs season would go into August. And then they would kick into the fair season late summer and into the fall. And the fair season is now expanded a little bit with no Scarborough Downs.
And, you know, people think, oh, fairs, it's low quality racing. They have shippers from Pocono, shippers from Saratoga.
Yeah.
No purses are less than $4,000 to $5,000, but some as high as $18,000. It's comparable to what we see up here.
Yeah, they're a lot of fun, and I'm glad to have you talk about it a little bit so we can push that.
103 on the list. 103 now.
That's very, well, that includes thoroughbred and harness.
Racetracks, I call it hounds, high lie, and horses.
Oh, greyhounds as well.
Greyhounds as well, but in the racetracks, I'm in the winner's circle of every track I've been to.
Oh.
I kind of weasel my way in there somehow, and I buy the photo and. I've gotten all of them through the years, and Highline as well, which is going by the wayside, unfortunately.
Ever been to Albuquerque Downs?
That's the obscure one that I
can put on my list.
I have not. I mean, when it gets that far away, I have to have an alternate reason to go there, like a friend who lives there, or a handicapping contest, or a second track.
It's actually a pretty nice track. It's scenic. There's mountains in the background. So I kind of enjoyed Albuquerque Downs. But on the bigger tracks, I always tell Oaklawn, I thought... My sister lives in Arkansas. I've made a couple trips there. That's nice. That's very Saratoga-like. Fairgrounds, I enjoy. Keeneland, obviously, is a must-go.
I just like the ham and egg tracks, you know, the regular folks.
Yeah.
That's what I relate to mostly rather than the big ones. And what was an easy thing to do to collect these tracks early on has now become a little laborious with flying and getting stranded and driving.
I'm not a big fan of flying to begin with, but the whole take your shoes off, take your belt off, sit in a seat that's like this big. Yeah, I'm not. But on the Greyhound side of things, and talking ham and eggs, my father, when he was retired, was straight down. So I used to do Sarasota Kennel Club quite a bit.
Really?
That was. And I will say, you wouldn't think it, but man, the buffet with the roast beef at the Sarasota Kennel Club was very, very good.
And I've adopted a couple of Greyhounds through the years.
Oh, nice.
I have one. I figured if you could bet on them, you could help them in their aftercare or adopt them or something.
Yeah, I know Steve Christ had adopted some Greyhounds as well. So, all right, let's jump into it and talk a little bit this afternoon. First, let's talk about the first 24 days of the meet. How's it going?
It's going okay. The column is doing pretty well. I'm just about at the breakout point, you know, break-even point for the takeout, rather. The DePaula Plays of the Days are doing okay. We had a nice winner the other day. 8-1 morning line, got up by like a half a length at $14, so that helped the bankroll bettors out there. And I haven't made any serious bets yet. I took some advice, some sage advice from somebody who said, you want to change things up, wait until the second half of the meet, wait until the latter third of the meet where you can really see what who had bad trips and, you know, things like that. So I'm taking things a little differently from that standpoint this year, but still staying up to 3 in the morning writing my column days and days and days in advance.
Yeah, that probably isn't bad advice, because any meet, the first few days, you're always rolling the dice because you don't know how the track's playing, who's going to be hot on the human side. So any meet, that first few days. But it's true. Once you get to the point we're at now you have some data to go by. So maybe now is the time to take some shots. And speaking of take some shots, I'm intrigued to see what you have in this fourth race. We're going to take a look at some races today. And on the handicapping show earlier, I said, and it's right here, top of my page, fourth race, Puzzle / Inconsistent Bunch. I went 6, 7, 5, and 4 in here. I tilted towards I'm Buzzy. Why? I'm kind of a Mike Deeney fan, so that pulled me a little bit in that direction. But I'm intrigued to see where you went in the fourth.
Well, there's no reason for me to talk or say anything because we have the exact same top three numbers.
Oh, I'd like that.
But what I don't like is that my top three selections are all on the same page in the form. So it looks like a drunken chicken stepped in some mud and walked all over my paper. So if I fumble a little bit in reading out my data, I apologize in advance because that's how close everything is. I went with, like you said, the number six, I'm Buzzy. Back-to-back career best numbers. Whenever you see a horse coming in with form like that, right off the bat, that says, I'm going to dive deeper into this animal. Castellano's been riding like his hair is on fire this meet, so you automatically have to take a second look on anything he's on as well. Solid placing versus similar last time out down at Monmouth, although sometimes that level can be a little bit weaker than the level up here. Still, it was a nice runner-up. And the numbers are heading in the right direction, like we said, from a speed figure standpoint. And Deeney, how do you say the name?
Deeney. I asked him. I actually asked him. He was up here earlier in the meet because I've heard people, you know, is it Deeney or does it rhyme with Minnie? Is it Deeney? And he said it's Deeney.
Okay. Well, Deeney wins at 12% on the norm. But from 9 starts with mid-level female turf riders who hit the board less than 50 days ago, this is according to, of course, DRF Formulator, at 8-1 or less, not getting blinkers. All these things matter if you're whittling that wood off the piece of lumber. From 9 starts, he has 5 wins and 2 placings, with winners coming back $6 times 3, 11 and 10. So you're talking a 55% win rate with the stats that are relevant to today, so we land on the top choice there. Second choice, number 7, French Frank. I don't like 3-1 on this horse. I don't like taking 3-1 on a horse that was up the track last time out. Yeah, the trip was awful, but sometimes you can give a horse too much credit for an awful trip and overbet the horse. But we like that the horse has won second time off a layoff, which is a scenario today. But once again, a little bit of an underlay. You'd like to get 4-1 at least, if possible, come postward. And like your third choice, my third choice is the number 5, Kemba. This one is what I call a nibbler by rote. 20 starts, just 1 win, but 5 seconds and 5 thirds. The kind of horse that I put in my unders. Has made the super in 6 of her last 7 starts and owns a win over the Melon. And always pay attention to how a horse does, not just in Saratoga, but whether it's the inner turf or the Melon, because the configuration is a little bit different. So like you, 6, 7, 5.
I like that because, as I said, to me it was kind of a puzzle. So I like it. I definitely like the Deeney stats.
Now you can bet with confidence.
That's what it's all about. But I do like the Deeney stats you pulled up. That does add to my confidence, actually. And again, 6th race, I have written at the top of the page, wide open. I went 2, 3, 6, and 8. I'm going to go with Mo Rewards off the seasonal debut, which I think is one to build off of. But how did you see race 6?
Well, we have 2 of the same 3 in the top 3. I went 7, 2, 3, and actually the 8 is my beatable favorite for the race. I'm not going to get into the intricacies of the stat, but Chad is 0-8 with all horses fitting these pertinent categories. So right off the bat, if you could take a stand against a Chad horse, maybe you can get paid in other regards. So my top choice, allowing me to flip the page, is the number 7, Wish Me Home at 12-1. We know Trevor's been a little bit cold this meet, but aside from the 3 wins, he has 12 placings and 14 shown. So it's not for a lack of effort. Some breaks haven't been going his way. It's not like he's been making poor decisions out there. It just hasn't fallen right for him. Schoenthal has done okay with limited starters this meet. 2 starts, but 2 placings. For a guy that comes in from out of town, that's always something to pay attention to. It's not like a local guy who doesn't have much stock. He's shipping the horse up here, up for grabs for the first time. Always look to see when a horse is being made available for purchase for the first time. I don't think anyone's putting $80,000 for this horse, because then you don't have too many options down the road. Being a Maryland bred, it's not like it's a New York bred where you can do different things with the animal. Digs the Trip has a win and a couple of placings from three starts at the distance. And, once again, formulated stat in play. 14% trainer, clicks at 36%, 4-4-11, with sod stayers, or those going long on the turf, who won less than 24 days back and are 20-1 or less. So the winners came back $10, $12, $7, and $5. And you get, check this out, you're getting 12-1 on a horse with the best last race turf buyer in the field, aside from the beatable favorite, who I don't like. So that's one of those things where you might look at after the race and say, how the hell did they let this horse go off at 12-1? It's staring you right in the page, the best or second best last race speed figure. So we're going to take a shot there with number 7, Wish Me Home. Second choice, number 2, Mo Rewards, like you said, showed stark improvement when switching to the turf. That was the first start off a long layoff. It wasn't a simple buck shins deal. It was a 10-month layoff. So definitely take a look in the paddock, because sometimes horses can regress second time off the elongated absence. But the turf pedigree is fantastic. Nice Tomlinson's for the surface and distance, and we're expecting another good effort. Third choice, like you like the number 3 Seal Bargain, so do I. Been in the Super once again, a perfect unders candidate. 7 of 8 lifetime starts. Back-to-back career best speed figures. Although they were on the dirt, the turf pedigree is just as good, maybe if not a touch less. So even if he regresses a little bit, should still be able to hit the board.
I like it. And finally, we'll take a look at today's feature, the New York Stallion Series, the Cab Calloway, a mile on the turf. I couldn't get past Dakota Gold. Are you going to look to beat the monster, or are you looking to maybe one punch an exacta?
No, I'm going to look to beat the horse.
All right.
I mean, it's Dakota Gold is not a throw out by any stretch of the imagination, but I found some other angles with a couple of other horses. I went with the number 3 Shinsun. This one is bred by a Shin Forward, who stands for 2,500. But I'm hearing decent things from people I know that are breeding their mares to this animal, including I don't remember Mary's Girl. There was a feel-good story about a young lady who was disabled, and they named a horse after her. Raced in New York and did really well, and she just dropped a foal from a Shin Forward. So I'm hearing good things about the sire, even for 2,500. Not only improved when facing winners in the second time out, but did it in open company. It's not like the horse went from a state bred special weight to a state bred allowance and moved up. Those starter allowances, open company, can get a little bit salty. So it's very rare you see a horse step forward in a big way when facing winners for the first time. Closed decently on a deep course. The fractions were really slow last time out, but was able to overcome the deep course that day in finishing third. And Barkley Tag, when it comes to his turf routers, not getting Lasix. That's a key stat with the formulator. Some trainers do well with Lasix, some do well without Lasix. And being an old school trainer, it doesn't surprise me that his runners do well without Lasix. Not getting Lasix, that hit the board 7 weeks ago at 14-1 or less. 6 starts, 3 wins, and 3 thirds. So a 100% in the money rate. And the 3 winners came back 16, 11, and 5. And you're getting a decent price with Louis Sires in the irons. Second choice, number 5, Marinara Sourced. Logical animal, good overall body of work. A bit disappointing in the last, but gets some post relief. Was marooned from the 10 hole that day, which can be a death knell on the inner turf course. And my third choice, flipping the page, is the number 10, Barrel Request. Interesting animal here. Has a win and a third in his last 3 turf routes, but gets overlooked in the betting department. 10-1 and I believe 13-1 in those 2 races. And the win came from an outside post. You like to know if a horse can handle coming from an outside post or an inside post, and you're getting IRAD at a decent price.
I like it. Taking a little swing in there. That will certainly juice up any pick plays, but your 3 also just playing exactas and tries. I think you're going to make a little money potentially in that race as well. So, very good.
It took a lot for me not to pick the steeplechase race today, but I went past it. I do like a long shot in that race also, the outside horse. I think 164 pounds is an awful lot for snap.
That's what I said. I went with the filly who won the Smithwick, because she gets in with a feathery, as I said earlier, 143, as compared to Snap Decision, who has the 164.
So you take a stand we'll against, and if the horse wins, you clap your hands.
Yeah, exactly. It's one of those that If you see a good performance from a horse like that, you've seen a nice performance on the jump site. Kevin, appreciate it. Continued good luck going forward with the plays of the day. We appreciate the visit this morning. Good luck this afternoon.
You too, sir. Thank you very much.
All right, we'll take a break. When we come back, more on this edition of Racing Across America. Don't forget, coming up in about 12 minutes from now, it is the Judmont International, but we'll have much more in the meantime. Stay tuned.
For four generations and looking forward to a fifth, Bruce Cerrone and his family have continued their 99-year tradition of delighting their faithful following with the finest authentic Italian recipes made with the freshest ingredients. Some things have changed in the last 99 years, but not Pinnell's commitment to the finest in Italian cuisine. Pinnell's Italian Restaurant, a Saratoga tradition since 1922. 284 Jefferson Street, just minutes from the track.
Capital OTB is now streaming live on Roku. The RTN Racing Channel on Roku lets you watch OTB TV live through your Roku device or your Amazon Fire Stick, rather than being limited to computers and mobile devices, which means you can now watch OTB live wherever you are. Simply open Roku, scroll to find the RTN channel, then click on OTB TV. OTB TV on Roku. Try it now.
Hello everyone, I'm Scott Vartley and I'm here at the West Condominiums in Saratoga Springs. And guess what? We are down to the home stretch. Everything is two bedrooms and two baths. Come make a selection of one of the greatest condos ever to be built in Saratoga Springs. We're starting in the upper fives and the only rooftop penthouse available now under construction. Wow, just look at this patio. We have a rooftop pool, heated garage, balconies, and a gym. Call me at 518-281-6808.
Welcome back to Racing Across America. Again, we're about 10 minutes away from the Judmont International. Just time for, got about 8 minutes here. From last year, we're going to take a look at the breakfast here at Saratoga. Again, with 3 weeks left, I thought, didn't want to shortchange a guest with the segment with the race coming up, but that eight-minute piece fits right in and gives you a little thumbs up on the breakfast. So again, this is from last year, the breakfast on the front side. Something to think about as the last 3 weeks are here of Saratoga. Breakfast at the racetrack. Talk breakfast. We're sitting up in your breakfast spot here, box seats, as you narrate the morning that's going on. Before we talk about the fan experience, I'd just like to get your experience because you're a longtime racetracker. Saratoga breakfast is a tradition. How much fun is it for you to be doing the breakfast?
It's been amazing. I've been doing it at Belmont for the last 5 years. Obviously, last year, because of the COVID, we didn't have it. And we didn't bring it back this spring as well. And when they offered me the gig up here, we kind of talked about how, you know, it was going to be the first experience back. And literally and figuratively, the first experience back. We started opening day, and when those gates opened at 7 o'clock, the first event you had at Saratoga for the 2021 season welcoming the fans back was breakfast at Saratoga. There was a shroud of fog covering the racetrack when we walked in. I was like, oh boy, this is not a good omen to kick this thing off. And then we had 2,000 people here that Saturday. So things are great. I love doing this gig. This is one of my favorite gigs. It's a little different up here. Down at Belmont, I would say the split is like 40-60 adults to kids. This is more of like a date. I actually had a couple of 18-year-olds come over to me and, you know, we have some giveaways here, some stuff for the kids. TRF, Kim and the gals left me some stuff, some quick call stuff. And, you know, young teenager comes over to me and goes, I'm on a first date. Can I grab one of these hats? And it was like, it warmed my heart. Like, it's amazing up here. And I mean, it's a great start to the day. Now, I've been in the game my whole life. I decided to go on the media side of things because when I was a kid, I found out very early, I was allergic to 5:30. I wanted nothing to do with being on the backstretch. But this has been a remarkable experience, a lot of fun. We play a lot. We play some trivia. We ask the trivia questions. Bob Giordano does the saddle towel guide. We give those out. We try to have them stump stabile. And, you know, you guys know, thank you to Capital OTV and everybody over there. First year, we're actually simulcasting the signal out and gotten a lot of great feedback from that as well. So Yeah, it's been a fantastic experience for me. It's helped me lose some weight too because it keeps me out of the bars.
Ah, there you go. Breakfast is 7 to 9:30 every day, and take us through for folks who maybe haven't had a chance to come over and experience it yet. What is the fan experience at breakfast?
Gates open at 7. That's when the running of the Bulls comes. So you can get your table, come to breakfast. There's a buffet available on the porch. $20 for adults, $12 for kids 12 and under. Here's the biggest long shot so far of the meet. I haven't eaten from the buffet yet, but I've been told the food is amazing.
Looks great.
I can tell you the coffee, that's a empty coffee cup. The coffee's great. That gets me going in the morning. And then the buffet's open until 9:30. We start tram tours. The tram is great. You take a tour of the backstretch. There is a paddock demonstration with a pony. We go over some of the equipment that's used by the trainers and jockeys and exercise riders in the afternoons and the morning. That's over by Clare Court. It's part of the tour. And then when you come back, there's a starting gate demonstration. You actually get to go into the gate and break out of the starting gate and see what it's like for our wonderful thoroughbreds in the afternoon. You can watch the horses train until 10 o'clock. I wrap things up at 9:30. You can watch the horses train until 10 o'clock, and then we ask you to leave. Johnny I comes on with the most famous, ladies and gentlemen, please get out of our building. He says it in a nicer way than I do. You come back in at 11 for admission, and then we kick off the 40 days here at the spot. It's been a lot of fun, and it is a fantastic program. Like I said, it's more adults up here than kids. If you fans out there want to start raising the next generation and to become fans of this sport, this is a great, great program to do it.
Yeah, Anthony, we appreciate the time setting you up for talking a little bit about breakfast, because I wanted to let people know early in the meet, if you haven't been here yet, come up and experience and watch the horses work out. And you kind of narrate the horses as they go by too as well.
Yeah, the biggest difference in the morning is you guys, if you're watching at home on the Capitol signal, you know, in the afternoons you see the jockey silks, you see the numbers. I mean, it's very easy as a racetrack announcer. Those are the two ways I identify them. But in the morning, it's a little different. That saddle towel guides that we get from Bob, they help you figure out, because trainers will use their initials. So Chad Brown will use the white CB against the navy blue backdrop. Bill Mott, Hall of Famer Bill Mott, he uses a white diamond against a green backdrop. So some guys and gals like to use their initials. Some like to use a symbol. We have that media, that saddle towel guide to kind of help you differentiate. And after 3 weeks, I kind of know most of them, so it's become old hat already.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun, and it's just a great experience. If you haven't been up here yet, it's part of the Saratoga tradition, so we recommend you coming up. Anthony, we appreciate the time.
Thanks, Seth. Thanks for everything. Hope to see everybody out at breakfast at Saratoga.
Joined now by Pat McKenna, Director of Communications here at NYRA. Pat, good morning.
Good morning.
And it is morning. We're here at Saratoga. I know we talked a little bit as we were approaching the meet, and then as we got into opening day and whatnot. One of the traditions that we were missing last year is back this year, breakfast at Saratoga. You know, you look at the crowd, there's a lot of, clearly you can tell, new fans, young fans, part of the tradition. Talk about how important bringing back breakfast was to the Racing Association.
Incredibly important. Having grown up in upstate New York myself, having come to the track since I was a little kid, I think some of my first memories are breakfast at Saratoga. I think it's a really great way to introduce young people to the sport. It's a much more casual and accessible kind of environment than you get during an intense afternoon here at the track. It's also a really kind of a cool way to be able to sit in the boxes, to see horses training in their own element. I mean, so many people are unfamiliar with a variety of aspects of thoroughbred racing, and to see these athletes, I think some of the exercise riders, people like Rudy Rodriguez, really engaging the crowd. So important to bring it back. It's great this year that Anthony Stabile can provide some additional information. Plenty of folks would look out there and rightly say, I have absolutely no idea what's going on. It's beautiful. These horses, you know, see, everything's wonderful. But, you know, for him to be able to provide some additional information, some context to what you're seeing, and you're right, it's something that's unique to Saratoga. I'm sure other tracks do it. We do a little bit of it down at Belmont, but nowhere is it embraced like right here at the spot.
And talk about the actual fan experience. 7 to 9:30 in the morning. You kind of mentioned there's the buffet downstairs, yep. But folks can come in, free admission, come in, sit in the box seats and take advantage of that kind of a special look at the racetrack as well. But also unique to breakfast, you get a access to the backstretch as well.
That's right, the backstretch tour. I'm glad you mentioned that because, again, that's a behind-the-scenes, lift-the-curtain kind of experience. And it's important that it's open to the public. You can pay for breakfast downstairs, but you can also bring your coffee in, you know, pop yourself here in a box, wherever your favorite spot might be. I mean, certainly see some of the stars of the sport. You know, again, it's important for Anthony to be able to explain to new fans, to young people, you know, when you see an influx of trainers, what exactly is happening. And there are so many intricacies of a sport like thoroughbred racing that it's just a great way to get involved. Again, you hear from, I hear from so many people who will tell me that the first memory they have of Saratoga is of coming with their family or their mom or their dad, sitting down on the porch, having breakfast and watching training.
Yeah, again, for folks who haven't been, it's great to come out here in the morning. It's a different side of the game. I think you'll have a lot of fun. Pat, we appreciate your time.
Yeah, thank you.
We get to sit here and we watch the horses come by, and the rider shows the horse off to us so that we can see him running almost sideways at times. Brings it over to the fence, waves to the little kids. This is a joy. This is, I think, well, this is, I'm sure, is a big part of racing, but this is a fun part.
So again, don't forget breakfast. We have 3 weeks left. If you've never been, it's a lot of fun. You can tour the backstretch and you get to see the horses working out in the morning, nice buffet. But again, you can bring your own donuts and enjoy those as well. So keep in mind, breakfast on the front side during the rest of the meet. All right, we're going to send it now to York. The Judmont International, $1.35 million, mile and a quarter, Bailly, the undefeated Bailly. You get a chance to see him 1-5. Mishriff is at 9-2 currently. And the 7 horse I thought was a little bit intriguing as well, Native Trail at 8-1. So they're entering the gate. We'll send it to York for the Judmont International. When we come back, Barbara Livingston will jump in on board. So stay tuned for all that. Coming back in a few, Judmont International up next.
They are off and racing, and Sir Busker just dwelt as the stalls opened for the 2022 Judmont International and gave away 3 or 4 lengths to his rivals. Now the pace is coming from high definition, and he's sent into an early advantage by Ryan Moore. Mishriff, who broke much better today, it was a good sign, racing in second place, 3 lengths down on the leader. He in turn is about 2.5 to 3 lengths clear of Native Trail, and Dubai Honor on the inside. Baid at this stage is in 5th place. The only horse behind him is Sir Busker, who's playing catch up as the runners head down the far side of the Naves mark. Looks to be a pretty good gallop being set here by Ryan Moore as they go past the 7 furlong marker on the far side. High definition up then by about 4 lengths now. Last year's brilliant winner Mishriff racing in second place. 2.5 lengths away then to Native Trail, the 3-year-old in third, followed by Dubai Honor, and his stable companion Baid is just on his flanks on the outside. Baid defending this unbeaten record and stepping up to 10.5 furlongs today. He's got one behind him. That'll be Sir Busker, who won the York Stakes here last time. So they're about to turn in to the home straight in the 2022 Judmont International, and Ryan is pressing on here on high definition, trying to just gain more momentum here on that bend. Leads by about 6 lengths there. Mishriff in second for James Doyle. Then in third on the inside, Dubai Honor making ground, Native Trail. And now between horses, Baid is picking up on the bridle under Jim Crowley as the runners head down now to the final 2.5 furlongs. Unknown territory from here on in for Baid as he eases into contention. Mishriff has dropped the front. Mishriff going on here as they race down towards the final furlong and a half. Jim Crowley's hardly moving on Baid. Now he's asking him to pick up this leader, and the response is instantaneous, and Baid gallops past Mishriff and goes on inside the final furlong. That was really impressive, and Jim Crowley's looking around here, and this is going to be brilliant. There's no question he loves the distance, and it's a perfect 10 for Baid in the Judmont. Wow, he's won by 6 lengths. Mishriff in second, Sir Busker close again with Dubai Honor for third, followed home by Native Trail and High Definition.
the juvenile fillies to 14 of them across the track. Is sent on their way. End of the dance on the outside. Broke a little sideways with Bro KK, but meanwhile it's going to be stopped. But running on now, and Somali Lemonade's got eight to make up. They come to the top of the lane. Stop shopping. Maria's got a lot left. Stop shopping. Maria goes on. Sweet Cat is right there. Hard not to like. Royal Body is running on. Past the eight ball, they come. Stop shopping. Maria for the run. Still under a hand ride as they come to the 16th. Stephanie's Kitten coming out late. Yes, Stephanie's Kitten coming fast. Stephanie's Kitten, stop jumping area. Stephanie's Kitten's water.
The chances broke smartly, but so did Terra from the Cape. On the inside, Sky Lantern the Grey going well. If he can get through, can get through. Sky Lantern the Grey looking for somewhere to run. Wide, wide open. It's Terra from the Cape hanging on. Terra from the Cape tries to go all the way. On the outside now, here comes Flotilla in the light blue. Flotilla is absolutely flying. Watch the chances in there too. But Flotilla has gone right on by. And Flotilla is coming home to score. Flotilla has won it just about two in the end. It'll be Watch the Chances, Summer of Fun, coming on to finish there.
Welcome back to Racing Across America. It was Baid over Mishriff. Looked like Mishriff had a nice little lead there in the stretch, but Baid now 10 for 10, taking the Judmont International. That was very impressive. He's very impressive. And I just wanted to be able to show you that this morning with a horse that, again, being overseas, maybe floats a little under the radar, but we're taking a look at the 10 for 10 Baid getting it done in the $1.35 million Group 1 Judmont International. Also, we're taking a look at the photos that are across the street as part of the Jim Raftery exhibit over there, a turf photos retrospective put together by Barbara Livingston, our friend, the photographer for the Daily Racing Form. Barbara, good morning.
Good morning. Hi to you and everyone out there.
I had to have you on because the exhibit opened up July, it'll run through September 30th, and it's amazing, and we'll get the story of how you got it and whatnot, but I put together a little video, and the guys can run that just to quickly, and it'll show some of the photos, but then we have some still shots that we'll pull up a little bit later on and explain, but I took a shot of the exhibit going over just to kind of give an overview, so why don't we start out, just tell us, who was Jim Raftery?
Jim Raftery was what I think is the most accomplished horse racing photographer of all time, as far as a track photographer and probably any other, at least in our country. He shot at six tracks regularly, visited other tracks often, and he was during a time when the media loved racing and racing loved the world and everyone wanted to see Kelso or Carryback or Nashua or Bold Ruler, and he knew how to get those images out near instantly, which was no small thing back then. Anything that might interest the public, he made sure to put in front of them so they could enjoy racing and see the beauty of it.
And you get a real feel for that across the street. Again, I will highly recommend if you're coming to the track, go over to the museum and catch the exhibit. It's there to the end of September. And again, we've got some shots here, and the guys can kind of go through these first three that I looked at because it's a shot of Jim Raftery himself. And then there's a shot of a couple of Joe Palooka cartoons that he made of that, which I think gives, you know, to the fact that he went beyond racing, or I guess maybe how popular racing was back then, that he got into the Palooka cartoons. Just talk a little bit about the different era, and how'd you come up with the Palooka cartoons?
Newspapers.com. I started looking. And he not only was in Joe Palooka, but several other cartoons that I couldn't find copies of, examples of, but Bob Hope even wrote about him in Bob Hope's column that he had at the time, because they served together. They were at a camp together in maybe California. But he wrote about how Jim Raftery was trying to get all the colonels to pose together, but he kept trying to put their noses on a wire or some hilarious Bob Hope kind of thing. And imagine nowadays if a track photographer could have that reach that he had. Again, racing was huge then. He had Monmouth. He eventually had Meadowlands. He had Hialeah. He had Tropical. He had Gulfstream Park. He had Atlantic City. He had Garden State. These were premium tracks, and how he did all of them is a miracle. But apparently he loved to drive, and he was a crazy driver, and he had homes all over, and he was that driven to do it, that he not only did the race finishes and winner's circle, which really are not in the exhibit because we all know what they look like, and instead, I could not believe the wealth of images that were interesting news-wise, or kiddies, or babies, or you know, whatever else might get newspapers to run the photographs.
And we just saw a shot there that showed some old film and some negatives and whatnot. And so you have the collection of photos that includes negatives and some of this other memorabilia as well, the camera and whatnot. Talk a little bit now about how you became aware of the collection and how you wound up with it.
I started collecting horse racing negatives in 1998 when a photographer named Jim Sames in Kentucky had the last picture of Man of War. I went to visit him just to buy a print, and he said, do you want to get all these negatives? What am I going to do with them? I don't have children. And they came home with me. And that just sort of got me thinking about it. And now I keep an eye out for such things at all times. So obviously I knew Raftery had a huge collection. He died in 1994. I didn't realize his family had kept it in their home in Miami and protected it. Although it took up three or four rooms worth of boxes here. They just were good enough to not throw out even 1958 at Waterford Park, which had not a single horse I'd heard of, but now I love Snuffy Sneezer. He set a track record there. So like it made you also fall in love with horses you might not know. But the fact that the Raftery family, the Bassings, kept them safe all that time, and one of his three daughters are all still living. They're not young. They wanted, the one that's keeping them wanted the negatives to go on to their next step. She wanted her father's work seen again. And appreciated again in a time that's completely different from back then. A lot of his photos back then didn't even have his name. Nowadays, people get their name, but they don't often get paid. So it'd be nice to have these brought back out so people could see how incredible Raftery was as a photographer and artist. He was an artist. He was a genius with the camera.
And, you know, reading about it, it was a chore to get them up here. How many boxes, and talk about moving them from the Florida location up to where you are now kind of curating and pulling them out and putting them on social media and across the street and whatnot.
Yeah, it's so much fun. Obviously, this is a labor of love, not a financial labor of anything. So it took a giant U-Haul. I've never driven a really big, it's not one of the little ones. It was a big one.
Like
you couldn't fit it in a Starbucks drive-thru. It was really scary. And I kept thinking of it as I was driving, and when I went around like the Baltimore, the 695, I could hear things in the trunk going, which was really scary. And I was thinking this man's life's work in that back, but it didn't even fit in there. I also then had to rent an SUV afterward and take that down, and then my car again. So a large, and now it's a large storage facility in Malta, which is climate controlled. I've been through every negative envelope to read the contents, but the thing that made me pull them out would be if it says Nashua and Swaps, Mesh Teddy, and Jim Fitzsimmons. I'm like, ooh, I gotta take a look at that. So I'm wildly guessing there were 300 boxes, wildly guessing there are between 2 and 3 million negatives, many of which are completely unique, because that's how he shot back then. Click, one frame. Out with the speed graphic camera, you shot one shot, pulled out your negative, put in a new one. Nowadays we shoot 20 frames a second.
I didn't even think of that. I was thinking, yeah, old time camera, which is completely different than now digital, as you say, boom, 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 and then you look at the on the back, you see if you got something you like, and if you didn't, you'd go,
exactly.
Which, but I didn't even think it's the old time where he's literally
actually pull it out. You pull out this 4-inch by 5-inch wooden carrier, and then you flipped it around, put it back in. Then you went to the lab and you processed them later and you found out what you had. There are times where he shot one shot, which was Swaps and Nashua looking at each other with Jim Fitzsimmons all dressed up in Mesh Tenny in his cowboy gear. And they're looking at each other, one frame. And it had to come out. And it did. That's the amazing thing, that it did.
Let's take a look at some of them, because I pulled up some of this. And I put the kind of a list together as I went and looked last night. And I will tell people they can also go to the National Museum of Racing website. And you can pull up even more photos, some of which are phenomenal, and I was talking about a couple of them before we went on the air. but he chronicles the people at the racetrack, the horses, the tracks themselves, the buildings, and the history of the facilities, the events, celebrities. There's a Grace Kelly photo across the street, but also the history and the culture, and we'll touch on some of that as we look through some of the pictures. I started out, I had pulled up Sonny Jim Fitzsimmons with a chair that says Racing's Elder Statesman, and again, just kind of shows, and then we can go right from that into, there's a shot of Colonel Sanders, so the celebrities of racing and the celebrities of culture as well, and again, showing kind of the popularity of racing at the time also.
Absolutely, and the fact that Mr. Raftery was wise enough, he started off as a hot dog salesman at the track. He had been galloping horses, got the camera, and it took him almost no time when he started shooting to realize celebrities, cats, dogs, children. He said if he photographed women, that's the gentleman. Okay, if he photographed women wearing white gloves, it would go out on the wire. People loved that. He didn't want to send out photographs of women without gloves. How odd is that? And finally, girl jockeys came along, which he called jockettes, like a lot of people did, or girl jockey. And he said, girl jockey will get more publicity than a Kentucky Derby finish.
Yeah, very good. And let's go back, if we can, to the photo of the jockey sitting in the jockey's room, because, as I say, he chronicles history as well. And this one is fascinating because the jockeys are watching the TV. They're watching the moon landing. This is crazy.
Yeah, it's sort of fun, actually. And I actually thought it was a moon landing. Weirder, it's a moon landing tests. Which they had a test beforehand.
That's right.
And then he does have pictures of the moon landing too, but fewer jockeys. So this was more interesting. Yeah, and he chronicled all sorts of history, whether it's race-related, women and men, any sort of social aspect. He obviously had people that helped him. He never pretended he did it all on his own. He said great PR people. He was a wonderful artist, and he made the backdrops for the Florida Derby winner's circles with the names in the background. This guy was, there was almost nothing he couldn't do, it seems.
Well, you alluded to it a moment ago when you talked about him being a hot dog salesman, but the story's even better. Talk about how he became then a photographer.
Okay.
This is crazy, too.
You looked it up, right? So, yeah, first he was an exercise writer and jockey, and up at, I believe it was Suffolk. I don't think Rockingham. I think it was Suffolk, but maybe Rockingham. And then he decided to go to Florida, and he became a hot dog salesman, I think Tropical Park. And someone left a camera at his hot dog stand, and he turned it in. Apparently, he turned it in dutifully and to Lost and Found. After a while, nobody came to get it. So they said, why don't you take it? And he said, hey, all right, I'll give it a try. And the earliest photos I have of his, they're terrible, are of Seabiscuit and War Admiral's match race. And he was there as a fan, obviously. But within 3 years, he was shooting Whirl Away as, you know, in the winner's circle, beautiful, beautiful images. That's 1941. It's only a few years. It didn't take much of a learning curve for the man.
That's crazy, though. You're a hot dog salesman. Somebody leaves the camera by mistake, and then the next you know, you're a world-renowned photographer. How often does that story happen?
Right.
Only in America,
and
as they
50
say.
And 50 years worth later, he's still doing what
crazy.
He loves. Absolutely.
That is insane. We also just showed the John Veitch picture. It's John Veitch and Aladar in a plane going back to April 1978. And you talked also about the culture was a little bit different. And there's a shot in there of the inaugural Boots and Bows Handicap in Atlantic City back in 71 when the, you know, girl jockeys, jockettes were kind of a new thing. And again, he's chronicling not just the history of the game, but also the culture as well.
Absolutely. And really interesting, I then looked up jockette to find out what people thought of it. And Robin Smith actually at the time said, what is that? That's not even a word. Like, what? Like, take that sign off our piece. Yeah. And I absolutely love that. But he knew well enough to chronicle them every step of the way, from Diane Crump getting her license to Barbara Jo Rubin the day that she was supposed to ride but got threats. And all the jockeys threatened to boycott. That was Tropical. And so she had to. And it's just her standing there looking at a perfectly innocent, pigtailed, just-want-to-ride woman.
Yeah.
It's pretty fascinating to see how that moved along. And I looked online on the newspaper's website, and the number of those pictures that moved into national newspapers is extraordinary.
Yeah, and, you know, again, it's hard to imagine now, but I'm sure at the time it was, horse racing being as popular as it was and the culture moving in that direction, I'm sure that was all big news at the time and worthy of kind of moving on. You also have, again, we saw the John Veitch and Aladar picture, but there's, you know, backstretch, and as I say, he chronicles really everything related to the racetrack. We have Charles Butler and Lord Avey. Nice shot of the groom in with the horse. So we can take a look at that one. Again, a great picture in the cat as well. So he's chronicling all kinds of things. But one that I got a kick out, and the guys at the museum were kind of pointing it out, laughing as well. There's a shot of Swaps getting a speeding ticket. You got to love this, because he just set a world record where I guess his actual speed would have been about 37 miles per hour. So he's getting handed a speeding ticket, which kind of shows the cleverness of Raftery.
Absolutely, and I have no doubt that he made that speed limit sign. It's got the signature all over it. And how fantastic, he even identifies the policeman. I think it was D.W. Baxter. Like, he put the details in that are remarkable. And look how innocent Swaps looks. And considering he broke the law, he really shouldn't look that happy. He's like, what'd I do? I don't get it. And how wonderful is that? That becomes such a classic image. When I saw that negative, like, I threw everything else aside and just sat in front of the scanner to stare at it.
Yeah, and that is hilarious. And again, I guess he was known for some of these stage photos.
Yes, very much
well.
So.
So again, just phenomenal. And also, we had a picture that shows Raftery again with an old Nikon camera. That there's some of that memorabilia over there across the street as well as the pictures.
Yes.
Talk about, kind of working with the staff over there and paring down to what you have. And as I say, there are plenty more on the Museum of Racing website also.
There definitely are, and I keep meaning to get more to them because they've said they'll post whatever I send, but I'm thinking maybe I'll make it a 25 pictures each month for the rest of eternity and
there
not even come close to scratching the surface. The people at the museum, when I asked if they were interested, instant yes. They're fantastic. Kate Masterson, obviously, Brian Boy, Stephanie Luce, I assume it's pronounced that way, L-U-C-E, and I've never asked her how she pronounces it, but she was remarkable. She went above and beyond. They came up with the idea of pink walls for Hialeah with green trim. It came out a little pinker than I think we all thought it would, but it looked fantastic. And the amount of work that she put into it singularly, Stephanie was incredible.
Yeah, I met her when I was over there.
She said,
it's tough to pare it down.
How she did it, and when she told me she had actually managed to get over 60 in there, I think, no way. And I had to go and look, I'm like, oh, you doubled them up. Well done. And then I hired Dorothy Hours, the writer.
Yeah, we showed a shot of one of the captions there, and she did the captions.
She did about half of the captions, and she's just such a thoughtful, interesting writer. She did she did all the research, and it makes the photos so much more full. Like, photos and words together are a pretty incredible combination.
Yeah.
Never more so obvious than when you look at these pictures and go, wow, that's Carrie Back and Kelso, and then you read about their competition. Like, it just fills in blanks that are just wonderful.
Yeah, again, I will highly tout, if you're up here for the races, pop over. It goes to the end of September, so even after the racing season, you have a chance. And if you're not familiar, the Racing Museum is right across the street. worth a visit anytime, but just make sure you go over and see the Raftery collection. Again, there are some pictures online, and I was laughing. That's worth checking out as well. Go to the National Museum of Racing website, you can get more. And I was talking to you as I was scrolling through those pictures online. There is one where it's got to be Jockey Cam 1.0, I said. It's probably a 50-year-old picture of a jockey with a motorcycle helmet, and it looks like a film camera on his head.
Like a full film camera, probably 30, 40 pounds. I think it ID'd him as Jeff Jeffries. And that was maybe 1970s. And I looked it up, and it was a Florida Derby day or the day before. So it sort of makes sense, but it'd be pretty, how did he keep it steady? Like, how did he even hold it up? It came with the backpack and
the whole strap.
It was pretty spectacular. And to see that through time, too, when they first had radios, when the Outriders first had it, every single aspect, Raftery captured the new toilets. I mean, every single aspect.
Which is great, because otherwise it's kind of lost to history. And as I said, he's hitting on the people and events and history and the culture. And I will also tell people to follow you on Twitter, because you're posting some of these on Twitter as we go along. And I had to pull up this one because you put it up a couple of months ago maybe, but I searched it out again last night. I thought this one was absolutely fascinating. Gulfstream Park. Raftery is obviously in the backstretch watching horses run by, and you can see the facility in the background. But more importantly, there are sailboats in the lake at Gulfstream. That's crazy.
I didn't remember that. And he loved the sailboats.
Oh, my.
He loved them. There was also a paddle boat called the Sewanee Queen. Like, he photographed it when it sunk. And it has his writing with capital letters, sunk, with exclamations. And apparently when it sunk, it even made the newspapers. That's how big racing was, that the Sewanee Queen sinking would make the newspapers. But how great are those? They had water skiers out there. Like, they had Kelso jumping at Monmouth. They had the U.S. equestrian teams in different places. There are things that are pretty great, and I'd love if they relived some of those things.
Yeah, no, and as I say, you're posting them regularly on Twitter, so I commend you there as well. And, you know, before we let you go, obviously have to, you know, remind people that you're out here kind of following in his footsteps and chronicling a lot of things. I pulled up a shot the other day. You and I kind of went back and forth on Twitter because you put up a nice picture of Dwayne Lucas with the press in his reflecting in his glasses, and I had taken a picture at the same time of you taking the picture. So there's you, and there's Dwayne Lucas after a win, all the press around. In a second, you'll see the result from Barbara Livingston looking at the Dwayne Lucas glasses and the press reflected. That's a great shot.
Hey, you're in there.
I am in there, right over his nose.
Hey, you look pretty serious.
Right over his nose. So that was kind of fun. And again, you're over here every day. And I want to touch on, because I'm sitting up in the press box a lot until 6 or 7 o'clock, which means I'm there after the races, and I'll look out, and, oh, there's Barbara out there. And I'm guessing part of what you think your mission is to kind of follow in his footsteps and chronicle the places and events and people. And so sometimes you're after the races kind of taking some shots of, you know, just the track after the races and kind of preserving history about yourself.
I try my best to do that. I go through the barns and look for things that might have been missed. And then when I ID them in my hard drives, which will end up in a dumpster, but if they don't, they actually have like barn 73. I even do satellite views on occasion, and I write what trainers were in which barns each year. And so I get here a little bit before sunrise most days, and I leave usually around sunset or after sunset. I'm always grateful when there isn't a sunset and I could just leave. But if they're nice, so, clouds, like,
that's right. If you're a photographer, you're looking for the gray, dreary day where you're like, ah, good, I don't
know. Absolutely. Perfect day for portraits. Gotta go. Exactly. So, yeah, this place is remarkable. Maybe 50 or 100 years later, somebody will be looking at some of my pictures. I don't care if they remember it's me, but if they can remember the history.
On a hard drive, it's going to be easier for that person to take it back to their house. They'll just be able to put it in the back seat.
You know, you'd think that, but then you think 20 frames a second.
That's right.
It's the worst.
Those hard drives could add up. So, yeah, I've said this to you before as well. As a photographer, when you walk around, particularly a place like this, which is so scenic anyway, I graduated from film school and was looking through a film lens myself a lot. And just the most mundane thing, if you have that eye, it's like, oh, that's a great picture.
Yes.
And so it's just, it's a never-ending kind of a process.
There'll always be something there. And entertainingly or not, I'll post things that get maybe 10 likes. I'm thinking, that is such a phenomenal thing. Not necessarily my photo, but the image, the moment, the whatever. And then I'll just post some boring thing of 300 likes. Like, what the? But you know what? The thing is to never forget that the people that love that thing, those 10 people who went like this, they really love that.
You are absolutely correct. And again, before we let you go, we were talking actually before we went on the air, Mick came out, we were talking a little bit about a 6-time Eclipse Award winner. And I pulled up a couple of your Eclipse pictures, pulled up this one. We had the replay here last year, 2 years ago up in Saratoga. But you got Frenzy Fire and Where She Told Me to Go with the biting incident down at Parks and the Gallant Bob Stakes, and then this one in the Reign of Tapiture. And I just wanted to talk a little bit. That's a great photo there. And again, one of your Eclipse winning photos. But the Tapiture one kind of intrigues me because you're taking a picture, you're thinking, I'm taking a picture of a horse in the ring. Well, that's an Eclipse winner. I'm thinking that's completely counterintuitive.
Absolutely. Would not be something you'd be thinking. And fascinatingly,
it is a great picture.
Yeah, and it's backlit because it was sort of right before sunrise, but they have the lights at Churchill. So that made the rain look a little bit extra crazy. And what was sort of interesting to me was afterward, Steve Asmussen Barn had been having a difficult time around that time. And they said, but that sort of symbolizes that there was a lightning storm going on, didn't matter, had to get it done. Obviously, I don't think that's why it won the Eclipse Award. It probably just that it was neat with all those spots and all. But yeah, that was fun. That the fact that the camera actually found the horse through all of the backlighting, that's when autofocus can be your friend or not your friend.
that took a while to dry out from that one. Great picture. And as I say, though, the one down at Parks, also a good picture. And again, one of your Eclipse Award winning photos, a 6-time Eclipse Award winner. Congratulations on that, certainly. And if you come over to the track, you will see Barbara Livingston running around taking pictures of the races during the day, the winner's circle, and whatnot. But again, I highly tout popping over to the Racing Museum and getting the Jim Raftery collection. Jim Raftery a Turf Photos retrospective. And again, they'll run through September 30th. And Barb, great job kind of preserving history. And not just preserving it, but making it available to everybody, not just over there, but as I say, Twitter as well.
I'm trying. It's so much fun to try to bring him back to life. The guy was amazing. Yeah, so
it's crazy.
Or beyond that.
And as I say, the pictures are chronicling history and whatnot. Some of them are just a lot of fun, like the swap speeding ticket picture. Highly recommended you stop over there. Have to mention also before you go, fellow SU graduate, Spanish U Week here. I had Tom Rooney from the NTRA on Saturday.
He didn't graduate,
but he played football there for a year.
Why didn't he graduate?
No, he didn't graduate from Syracuse.
Oh, I see.
He eventually went someplace else.
Just checking.
Yeah, no.
Just judging,
no,
kidding.
No, he did graduate. And eventually went on to a master's degree as well.
I get it.
So it's like SU week here.
That's fantastic. Yeah. Couldn't ask for more.
Yeah,
go Orange.
Barb, appreciate it. Again, great work on preserving the collection. Great work day-to-day for the Daily Racing Forum as well. Appreciate your stopping by.
Thank you so much for your interest.
Barbara Livingston, again, six-time Eclipse Award winner. You can see her work regularly. What might be the next Eclipse Award winner? If you pick up the Daily Racing Forum, the hard copy, or go to dailyracingforum.com. Stop by, check out the retrospective across the street. You can also catch a lot of photos at the National Museum of Racing website as well. All right, we'll wrap it up for the Wednesday edition of Racing Across America as we kick off another week. The weather has really turned nice. Hopefully that holds up through the rest of the day. Some great racing today. The Jonathan Shepherd, I love the jumper. It's going to be fun to see Snap Decision. I'm going to go with Down Royal getting the feathery 143 today. We'll see how that works out. Also, the New York Stallion Series. Some great racing this afternoon. You can catch it all here on the network. We'll be back tomorrow morning with the Handicappers Report at 9 a.m. Racing Across America at 10. We'll see you then.
Generations and looking forward to a fifth, Bruce Cerrone and his family have continued their 99-year tradition of delighting their faithful following with the finest authentic Italian recipes made with the freshest ingredients. Some things have changed in the last 99 years, but not Pinnell's commitment to the finest in Italian cuisine. Pinnell's Italian Restaurant, a Saratoga tradition since 1922, 284 Jefferson Street, just minutes from the track.
Come on.
I want sales reports on my desk by Monday.
Whoops. My bad.
Love racing? RTN brings you every live simulcast on your home television, plus live video streaming and race replays on your PC and mobile devices. To order, visit RTN.tv. RTN, a breed apart.
You're watching OTB TV, a service of Capital Off-Track Betting.